Today we are joined by Oliver Baumann, who is an associate professor in the School of Psychology at Bond University. He received his Master of Psychology from Karl von Ottjetzky University at Oldenburg in Germany, and his PhD in cognitive neuroscience from the University of Regensburg in Germany. And he's a member of the Australian Psychological Society and the Australasian Cognitive Neuroscience Society. And Dr. Baumann has worked at several high-profile academic institutions, including Aalborg University in Denmark, the University of Oslo, Norway, the University of Glasgow, and the University of Queensland. And today he is on the Workplace Makers podcast. So Oliver, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thanks, Nina. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
With your background, tell me, how did you get interested in the effect of space on people's psychology? What was it that caught your attention about that?
Yeah, so it was quite a long journey. So I started off my interest, when I started my PhD, it was mainly just looking at brain functions and perception and memory. And that, when I moved to Australia, I started to do research on how we memorize spaces. So that's when I first really started to get interested in the built and natural environment, but from a perspective of how do we navigate around it and what brain systems we are using for memorizing environment and navigating through them. And by doing that for a while, I then kind of, and also you're thinking about spaces a lot, I got interested into what spaces do to us and the effects that they have on us in terms of mood, behavior, and also cognition. So that's when I kind of moved to Bond University, that was kind of a bit of a shift in research focus in terms of what environments, how they affect us and investigating those effects.
When you talk about that, it brings to mind those incredible memory tricks that people use to memorize huge swathes of information by moving around space. Was that part of what you were originally drawn to, was how space can help people remember things more effectively?
It's linked to it in a sense that probably our memory systems were largely built initially for encoding spaces. So if you think to the earliest or the simplest forms of animals, the only thing they really have to remember is where things are, where their home is, where food is. So memory systems were probably built for encoding space. And then everything that came later was also encoded. But the most important thing for survival to encode was actually the environment. And I think that's probably also why those tricks, how we memorize more abstract information using spaces, can work, because we have this kind of, natural link or affinity to encoding spaces.
Isn't that incredible when you think then about what we're doing with spaces today and how we build space, how we design space, how we create space? It's really almost limbic, would you say, the effect that it has on people. It's really getting at that very elemental level of what it means to be a human.
Yeah, because it's really closely linked to, well-being and feelings of safety and comfort. So, and that's obviously not only for humans, but also for animals. It's really important that where we spend most of our time are places where we feel safe and comfortable. And I think it's something that we're all aware of, but often modern life not always necessarily allows us to be in spaces that we feel comfortable in. So I think it is kind of therefore the importance to really pay attention to it, not only in the private sphere, but also in the professional sphere, therapeutic environments, work environments, and so on.
So interior design is not just decorating then?
Yeah, so decorating would be maybe one aspect of interior design, but it goes deeper. So it's not just making something just visually appealing, but designing it so that it enhances well-being, minimizes stress. But yeah, it's also really that we create environments for optimal productivity, whether it relates to work productivity or just private productivity. So,
and that's a great segue to something we would love to hear more about. I'm sure I know my audience will be interested to hear what you see as being the key features, if we could call it that, or the key elements of, let's say, spaces where people work that do lead to the greatest productivity and engagement. What have you seen from your research?
From the research that I've been doing in that field, so especially highlighting the advantages of green spaces or natural views for productivity. And then also in my news research, the looking at organic shapes or specifically round shapes in building design. And again, this probably goes back to our evolutionary preferences for spaces that are comforting and signal us safety in terms of just safe and pleasant environments in terms of food supply and water supply. So I think that's a link to a greenery there. Lots of, especially in the tech industry, you would see kind of typically the pioneers in terms of being a little bit bold and really trying to create spaces that are beyond just functionality and cost efficiency. So I think therefore, both from research and also from some of those experiments, especially from big tech companies who also really take that advice on board and probably can afford and have to afford taking those lessons on board for really ensuring that they get the most out of their employees and to retain them.
I'd love to hear more about this recent research where you discovered this link between round rooms and creativity. And I believe that was reported recently on the ABC website and a news outlet in February of 2024. What are you able to tell us about what you discovered about this link between round rooms and creativity?
What we did kind of systematically investigate the impact of round rooms versus rectangular rooms, focusing on subjective measures, just self-reports of people in terms of how they feel in those environments. But then we also looked at more objective markers, their creative output in those environments, and their heart rate in those environments also as an objective measure of physiological arousal. And what we found, and we used VR, I should say, because that allowed us to really keep the environments equivalent apart from one being round and the other one being rectangular. And we found that in a round room, people were significantly more creative. They felt better, both in subjective reports, but we could also see that in lower heart rate as well.
On all your three measures, there was a distinct and significant difference. An improvement if you're looking for how they feel and you're looking for creative output and you're looking for lower stress. The round room delivers all of that, not just creativity.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what we found. Yeah.
So what is it about the round room? Is it about removing hard edges? Do you have a hunch from what you saw what it was about roundness of a room that causes that?
Yeah, so it's a good question. And previous research, not necessarily on rooms, but just on shapes in general, like in drawings or for objects, already has established quite firmly that humans have a preference for round shapes. And that could be just related to it being, again, just safe. So it could be something that we come with evolutionary, that rocky things can harm us while round things are safe. Or round things might be also more fun. So there could be just this, evolutionary priming to those spaces. But then there are also other arguments that go to that round spaces and places are often more suited for collaboration in terms of how people can fill that space. And then also other design theories in terms of looking at flow, visual flow of spaces would also suggest that round, organic, rounded spaces have also an advantage and just in terms of really creating really pleasing environments.
So it really ticks a lot of boxes, roundness. It's that safety aspect with taking the hard edges out, but then also the way people can fill the room and how you can use that in a design. And do you think that if a building was full of round rooms, the effect would be the same? Let's play that thought experiment out. Is it the fact as well that the round room is different from most rooms that people find themselves in offices today? Is that part of the effect, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it could enhance the effect that given that most rooms nowadays would be rectangular, that it also has an additional novelty factor to it. Mm-hmm. And yes, would be really then something to observe in long-term experiments, whether people habituate to it, but the effect gets somewhat less the advantage, or it could be a stable effect or even an increasing effect. And I mean, there are some buildings, I think like quite famous is that fantastic headquarter by Apple, the Apple Park, which is like a circular.
The ring, yeah.
Yeah, huge circular building. So in a sense, there we would have people who are now, working for longer periods in essentially like in a huge round building. So I think that would be really interesting to see how people there feel about it.
their stress levels and their output. It'd be really interesting to measure those. Yeah, that'd be fascinating. And what about what should be in the room? So either in your experiment or from what you've seen elsewhere, what if people are wanting to bring these insights into their design and into their spaces, what would you recommend in terms of what's in the room, in terms of furnishings and equipment?
If you know from environmental psychology, often there's also benefits of natural materials in the room. So kind of like, yeah, wooden features, for instance, are also typically related to people just feeling more comfortable in those spaces, and also softer edges in furnishings as well. And then, yeah, and the integration of greenery into the environment, it also really shows huge effect in terms of just like cortisol, so stress level really being lower in those spaces that bring greenery inside, so that people are, yeah, less stressed, more happy, and that's then typically also linked to being more productive.
Mm, and that goes back to that safety, that pleasantness, the access to water and the things that you were talking about before, those biological links. Perhaps even just to go back a step, what were some of the creative activities that people were doing in the experiments? My creative might be different to your creatives. Let's get on the same page about the kind of activities that we're talking about.
Yeah, so we use a standardized test that has been around since the 60s. It's called Guilford's Alternative Uses Task. And that requires subjects within a short time frame to generate alternative uses for and creative uses for everyday objects. So for instance, the object could be like a brick, for instance, and then they have like a minute or 2 minutes, depending on the setup time, to come up with creative ideas of what could be done with a brick. So kind of something non-creative would be to say, you know, I build a house with it, because that would be a standard one. But then you could say, I will use it as a door stopper, or I use it to draw something onto the wall. Then we look at, first of all, the quantity of responses that they're coming up, but then also the quality. And in the past, creativeness would have been judged subjectively by raters, but now there are also software tools that look at semantic spaces, so that essentially like a huge corpus of words and how they're semantically related, and that algorithm gives more points for solutions that are semantically very far removed from original meaning of the object. So therefore, there are also no more objective ways to look at what's actually an unusual or creative answer, in addition to the quantity.
And so obviously, you found greater semantic space and a higher quantity of creative ideas as well.
Yeah,
so interesting. So, how can we apply this to the modern office in terms of creative activities? What would be your hunch around the types of activities that people would do best in a round room if they're a modern day office worker? What would you recommend? What would be some of the things they could take into a round room and do there?
I would say anything which is not a routine task, and so that every time there are new solutions, new projects have to be designed, coming up with doing things differently and better. So anything that kind of just involves not just working on a task, but really kind of solving a problem, and therefore kind of being in a space that it's a little bit less functional and different, can really make also the difference there to kind of just getting out of the routine. So I think that can be the advantage of having specific thinking spaces. So in addition to making the office like a pleasant space, having dedicated thinking spaces, cooperative thinking spaces or solitary thinking spaces, which are again yet just another room from the space where everyday activities like emails and so on would be done.
Great. So there's something there about thinking, but then there's also potentially applying it to collaboration and cooperation.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you see any examples around Brisbane or in Queensland or in other cities that you visit? Have you seen any organizations doing this with round rooms? And I know your research has just come out, but I'd be curious, apart from Apple, whether you've seen any modern day examples.
Yeah. I mean, would be Amazon. They have those spheres in Seattle. And so these are kind of big glass domes, essentially, where they have, it almost looks like a botanic garden inside with work and thinking spaces. And yeah, the whole thing was also kind of built for recreation, but also as an idea where employees could go for potentially coming up with new ideas. And then also opportunity to walk around as well, to not necessarily having something where you can only sit, but a space where you could actually walk around or sit in between. And yeah, really with the idea in mind for something to stimulate creative thought. That would be, yeah, yet another kind of quite popular.
The walking around is interesting. It reminds me of walking philosophers, that old concept of, you know, apparently Socrates and the others who were famous in the philosophy traditions from millennia ago, and I'm sure it's still happening, have been known to walk around to facilitate their ideas.
Monasteries and universities also, you know, the old universities had those kind of pathways for walking along the buildings, so which I also promote. Well, designed with that in mind.
Can we maybe go to the flip side? What organizations or situations would round rooms not work for? It sounds fantastic and there's so much potential there. Is there a personality or a role or, you know, some aspect of someone's psychology that would make them not successful or that would increase their stress or reduce their creative output in a round room?
Yeah, so I thought we're obviously all different, and what people really value is having some choice. So I think in general, it would be good if people can have a say or a choice in terms of the places they're going to work in, because if they feel forced into something, then they're always going to like it less. So I think, that's kind of would be more related to the autonomy of it. There would be obviously also some functionality concerns in terms of how those organic shapes are being implemented so that they are, you know, not conflicting with kind of the functional needs of a space. But I guess there would be ways to kind of, you know, you could have less extreme shapes so that, you know, still relatively normal furniture could be used in those rooms. But yeah, I would say per se, there would be not a reason that I think that rounded or organic shapes would be detrimental to anyone.
You said that people in general have a preference for round shape. That's really interesting. Is that universal?
Yeah, it's really universal, and even they found it in apes as well, so that even kind of, in a way, our human relatives to humans and evolution also have that preference. And so therefore, yeah, generally there seems to be a tendency of these organic shapes, rounded shapes, or complex shapes are typically seen as both stimulating and kind of soothing, comforting.
What about, to get down to the nuts and bolts, I guess, if a designer is looking at a budget, usually there's a fairly high consideration on their priority list. And I can imagine them thinking, well, we can't make all the rooms round because we've only got so much space, and round doesn't necessarily use space very efficiently. So would you have a direction even to recommend around the degree of choice that people might want to make available, or how to, I guess, maximize within that trade-off of needing to have an efficient use of space?
Yeah, I think definitely it's more complex to build, to consider both the functionality as well as the aesthetic factors of the building, but that's the advantage also now of more powerful computers and also more methods for creating and designing buildings with 3D printing and other modern types of construction techniques, so that again, the costs are somewhat becoming more affordable. Because if you look back 200 years ago, there were lots of more intricate shapes, you know, in buildings visible. But back then, I guess labor was still cheap enough that they could afford enough people to create those buildings. Then we went through a time where everything was very kind of efficient, factory produced, and, you know, labor would become too expensive to build those fancy buildings from 200 years ago. But now with computer and modern production techniques, I guess it's becoming again more affordable to create those a little bit more bold spaces as well, and be more experimental in terms of how we use space. And because efficiency, because like even with those square buildings, it's often the question, are they really efficient? If, for example, if staff are not coming in because, you know, if they don't have a window or they don't feel comfortable and they're choose to rather work from home or they're more sick and all that. So in the end, it's always a question, what is actually in the end more efficient? You know, if it avoids turnover and increases productivity. So I think considering all those more complex factors could actually mean that overall it could be more efficient.
You've given some really great tips around how to implement this idea, these insights from the research. Is there anything else that you think people need to pay attention to as they're implementing that we haven't quite covered yet, or anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I think what is really kind of important to design spaces from a perspective that, you know, whoever designs that space, whoever commissions this place, kind of would feel themselves even comfortable in there. Yeah, kind of, I mean, almost it's a test, not putting the emphasis on the cost factor, but really getting a sense of, you know, how does this space makes me feel. I think that's an important consideration. But then also using the knowledge from environmental psychology, and then also a mix out of subjective and objective data across multiple people to kind of get a good evidence based in terms of what building might work and what might not work. So it's really having a humanistic approach in building design, but then you're also being data driven and taking the science on board in terms of trying to design a building for current times to create the best space possible.
That's great. It's really awesome that you bring in around the data and multiple data points because of this experience of people being multidimensional, space is multidimensional, but people are reasonably complex. So having a variety of different data points there is really key. I think that's a great observation. And I wanted to come back to something else you said there around the person who's designing it, that even they would feel comfortable in it. And I think that can be a great antidote to things like the chicken farm desks, and they're all laid out in rows where it just feels like everyone's turned up and plugged into the matrix to do their day's work. And what's interesting is I find that there's another layer of information that's needed that goes beyond even the designer themselves to really capture that variety and that diversity across the organization, which the designer usually can't get their heads right into in the same kind of way. That we do need to be looking more broadly, going bigger, thinking more about this incredible diversity that we have in the workforce now in terms of roles, people, personalities, preferences about where and when people work and how they do that. So, yeah, I think the point around getting that data and informing your design is really how to come back and make it efficient, which is such a great question. Is it actually efficient if it's causing a lack of productivity or increased turnover? Did you have any comments on anything I've said there before we finish up?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with it. You're kind of like data-driven approaches, but also you're really considering what's already out there in environmental science or specifically environmental psychology in terms of what we know nowadays about creating the best possible buildings.
So Oliver, in terms of creativity and semantic space, this question is totally left field, but it helps people just have a memory of you and get to know you just a little bit. If they want to reach out and connect, they know who they're talking to an even greater degree. So left field question, what is your favorite food to eat or to cook?
Yeah, at the moment I'm really into Asian food. So dumplings and Asian style soups is one of my favorites at the moment.
Oh, like a good Vietnamese pho.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you have any final words, anything to come back to or draw a line under before we finish up for today?
That's really just to emphasize, especially the role of kind of nature, organic shapes, and kind of like seeing where we come from, you know, as humans in terms of with the connection with nature and how that's linked to our sense of well-being. And I think that can be really key in creating spaces that are human-centered. I think that would be really great if that becomes more of a priority.
Fantastic. And how can people reach you to talk more about the research or more about what you're doing in other ways?
Yeah, the easiest way is just to find me via my webpage at Bond University. So if you just Google Oliver Baumann, Bond University, then you will find my page at the School of Psychology with my contact details.
Fantastic. Thank you, Oliver. Thank you so much for taking the time to share this research with us. It's incredibly insightful and I think we'll get a lot of people thinking. It's really interesting.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Nina.